You might have thought it would never happen, but Switchcast is endorsing a transport company. Whether you're moving a rare collectible, a high-end sports car, or your personal luxury vehicle, Shaughnessy Overland Express delivers with precision, privacy, and respect. This isn't just transport, it's white glove care from pickup to delivery. For over 14 years, they've earned the trust of collectors, enthusiasts, dealers, and owners by offering unmatched service and personalized attention. You'll work directly with their experienced in-house team, ensuring a smooth and private experience without middlemen or surprises. Every shipment is protected with up to $3 million in cargo insurance, offering peace of mind for even the most valuable and rare vehicles on the road. In addition to their enclosed fleet, they've also established a trusted auto transport brokerage service, giving you access to a nationwide network of vetted open and enclosed carriers. Whether you need transport on a route they don't currently operate or their carriers are at full capacity when your schedule demands, they'll still get it done without compromising the Shaughnessy standard of excellence. Same professionalism, same personal touch, expanded flexibility. We are proud at Switchcast to endorse Shaughnessy Overland Express as the official transporter of Switchcast. Visit soexinc.com and tell them Switchcast sent you. Welcome back to Switchcast Season 6. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders, and Hello. Our international executive producer, distributor, Ethan Huffnagel.
Our technical advisor has left the room, I guess.
I'm not sure where he went, but I'm here.
Our technical advisor, Dan Doucette, is on hand with us. Again, he will be consulting on the Patreon or sitting in on the Patreon with us. He is a wealth of absolute nerd knowledge. We are not. That's why we stick to mostly stuff that's tangentially related to cars. Crazy stories, you know, intellectual debates. We're not talking about engine codes and 1990s BMWs. If you like that, this is not the podcast for you. We could make stuff up for a little while, but it wouldn't last long.
The amount of times that I've been really excited about a new piece of knowledge that I came across, and Dan's like, oh, you didn't know that? I was like, no, I didn't. But I know now.
Newsflash, Dan didn't either. He's just making you feel little.
That's
that kind of Ooh. Guy. Not really. Boy, oh boy, if you enjoy this podcast and you want more of it, really all you have to do is like, subscribe, share, leave a 5-star review, leave a comment, anything that will actually help the algorithms share it with more people. So then our sponsors will be more supported and we can give you more of it. This is fun, but it's not a charity. So help us out if you would. You can also contribute directly and directly get more on patreon.com/switchcast, where you get live interaction during the filming of the shows and bonus Patreon episodes. There's now, do like a pro America Patreon. Would it be like a Patreonic?
You might need Patreonic. To workshop that one some more. I see where you're going. I don't know. There's a lot, you know, folks used to love the live show and the banter and whatnot. And I think there's a lot more of the banter happening in the Patreon stuff because it's more casual.
Okay. So let's see. Ethan, can you watch back the whole Patreon? Is it on there like the live recording?
If you are on the Patreon, you can go back and you can watch these live streams.
So you can pretend you're there with us live if you're not available on Tuesday evenings.
And people do.
Yeah.
People do.
Cool.
Love it.
Cool. Or we have some international listeners that are like up at 3 a.m. to watch us, which shout out to you guys. It's awesome. And we love hearing from you about that as well. I saw an interesting car this week. Okay. We talked about the Packard Motor Company that two guys locally here in Ohio that were resurrecting the brand. They had bought the rights to the brand and the manufacturing and stuff, and they had a small display store in Medina, Ohio. But they were going to make like resto mod cars, essentially. And this week I was invited over to an undisclosed location to see a car. That was all I was told. I was like, eh, all right, whatever. It's a slow day. I'll go check it out. So I get there and it is sort of a Packard. Well, it is the new Packard's company prototype hidden away in this dusty barn.
Okay.
Under a tarp. was like, whoa, that's interesting. I've heard about this. And Myron Vernis, who had initially told us about this company or sent us the link, or maybe we found it, but anyway, he had speculated that what we said was a prop of the week at the time, because we thought it was a cool idea. He said, this might be a future flop of the week.
Uh-oh.
I think he was right. So this was last week, I think, I went out to look at the car, and it was essentially a Packard body on what looked to be an 80s General Motors van chassis.
Oh.
Which is not unheard of. The Auburn Speedster recreations use a similar chassis.
So this, you didn't see the 1999 Packard 12 like prototype that I'm looking at right now.
The
that
blue
is
one.
Pretty hot.
The blue one.
No, this one's like beige.
I saw a blue one.
Okay.
I saw a blue one, and it was in their showroom in Medina for a while, but it got sold off, which is not usually a good sign, unless maybe they're getting funding for, you know, starting actual manufacturing. But I had a look around it, and it was not particularly finished.
Okay.
There was no door handles, and the door panels were Velcroed on. The reason being is you had to pull the inside door panel off in order to get to the cable to pull the door release.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There was no lights or trim or logos on the car. The wood trim on the inside was pretty rough. But I was told that they had nearly $400,000 into this car. Now, a lot of that is probably research and development to try to figure out how to manufacture this.
Is it like a new manufactured like build thing? Is it cobbled together parts?
It looks like, I don't know where they got the body panels. I would have assumed that maybe when they bought the rights to this company, maybe they had a body or two left over somewhere, because the body looked fairly accurate. But yeah, that definitely didn't have a Packard motor in it. It was just GM underpinnings.
Say this article on Fox 8 from December of 2023 says that possibly by 2025, for an undisclosed price, the Victoria could be ready for the road and a new generation of customers.
Mm.
Yes. Packard isn't just about cars or hats or shirts. That's all cool stuff. But in particular, we're here for liberty and freedom, says Andrews. And I think Andrews is the current owner of the right. Scott Andrews, the founder and CEO of Packard Motors.
So I went digging around to see if there are any updates on the company, and I went to their website, and it was a fairly normal site, packardmotors.us. This was last week, and I was looking at their stuff, and then I went back to look at it, and it said, sorry, this store is currently unavailable. Yeah. So like literally since I opened the site to do research on the podcast, and now their site is no more. So it appears that their company is no more. The House of Packard Google business page says permanently closed. So, yeah. Well, another one bites the dust.
Beow, beow, beow.
Small manufacturing is difficult. In sad news this week, a Reliable Carriers driver was killed unloading the famous BMW M1 Andy Warhol art car for display in I believe DC.
Yeah, it was in DC.
The comments, however, on the articles were pretty insensitive and some really poor attempts at humor. I understand that some people are politically motivated to make negative comments on somebody else's passing, but like this is a truck driver doing his job, and a good truck driver. Like Reliable is known for hiring great people. They run a really good operation. So it's not one of these fly-by-night companies. Even if it was, you never want to see that happen. I couldn't believe what's wrong with people on the internet, honestly. What's wrong with people that they feel the need to take it out on the internet? We love our people at Reliable, and our hearts go out to the entire family of drivers there. It's a really, really sad, sad story to hear. On another note, less sad, thankfully. My friend Dan Krieger texted me. He has a new product idea.
Ooh, are we going to get rich?
Maybe.
I'll buy McLaren F1s?
Maybe. Maybe. But
Ethan would get a cross cab.
You know those car capsules that they sell?
The bubbles.
The bubbles that Corvette people love. They filter the air so you have no dust, nothing. You can't touch the car. Well, he thought it would be perfect if he could somehow figure out how to make one that you could still use while you're driving.
Okay.
So Corvette people could like go to car shows and never get any dust, water, or anything on their cars. And it would protect it from people touching their cars.
It would probably look like a parade float, just like scooting down the street. I think this exists. You're not driving, but it's really just a trailer or a flatbed. Like you can just put the capsule on there and take it to the car show.
No, it's too much work. You could just have the capsule on at all times and just move with it.
Float around Jetson style.
You just have to wax your wheels.
Yeah, that's the thing. Are the wheels still poking out from under, or like is there another set of wheels
I don't know.
Underneath that the wheels inside turn? Is a
I don't know. Maybe this is a project for the Packard engineer.
They seem to be bored now. So
yeah, do some car bubbles.
Do some car bubbles.
Dan, he's your neighbor. You should knock on his door, see what he's up to. Get on this idea. Get on it. We could load our pockets.
Ethan definitely said, move on. Turn it on the cameras and stuff. He's like, he's like, all right, boys, pack it up.
Soul and Spine wants everyone to have a higher quality of life. They specialize in non-surgical options for those who have been told that they need injections or surgery. They offer state-of-the-art techniques that help over 90% of patients become pain-free in just weeks. Starting with thorough medical history and comprehensive examination, you'll work one-on-one with Dr. Hoover to meet all your treatment goals. Their mission is to unleash your body's own healing potential to avoid drugs and surgery. Visit SolonSpine.com to learn more, located in Solon, Ohio. This may or may not be a hot topic. I think it is.
Oh, boy.
Uninsured drivers.
Oh, boy. Are you buckled? I'm buckled.
This is a very, very big problem. Approximately 14 to 15% of drivers in the U.S. do not have insurance.
Are you serious? That's huge.
It's massive.
Whoa.
It's massive. So I'm sure you have looked at your policy. You have uninsured and underinsured motorists coverage.
Yes, of course.
Right. So that costs you money every year.
It does.
And if somebody hits you that's not insured, it will cost you more money because then you'll have a claim on your insurance for something that wasn't your fault.
Oh, boy. Look, I'm going to put a pin in those thoughts. We'll come back after you get off this intro because I'm ready to go. Got problems, Doug.
Right. So you would admit that the cost of people, we'll say choosing not to have insurance or not being able to afford insurance, is getting passed on to you.
Well, of course, because the insurance company cannot take a hit in their profits, Doug, because insurance is absolutely a for-profit industry, and that's exactly what it should be.
Well, how do they stay in business if they're not?
Don't need to make
they
a profit.
They have to have money in order to pay claims.
Well, you can have money with that. We can come back to that.
Right, just like the Catholic Church. They don't have profits. They're a nonprofit organization. But
well, that's also
insanely rich. Okay. Side note. Did you see the Pope condemned Tesla for the $1 billion pay plan for Elon Musk this week?
No, I did not.
I thought the irony there was you could cut that irony with a knife. I'm like, the organization that is the largest landowner in the world, massive, massive reserves of cash, the organization whose leader was gifted a $1 million Ferrari, is saying this executive gets paid too much? Come on. Okay, back to insurance.
This would be a spicy episode, Ethan. Good luck.
We don't talk about politics unless it's car related. Hard and fast rule. This is car related, car insurance. So I think most people know which side of the political aisle I fall on, although I consistently try to confuse people in that regard, because it really doesn't matter. The thoughts and issues matter. So I was thinking about that. The cost of people not having insurance gets passed on to you already.
Mm-hmm.
So you're essentially subsidizing them.
Mm-hmm.
So why are there such stiff penalties, financial penalties anyway, for people not having insurance? Why not just lean into it and say, okay, well, there's a reason people don't have insurance. They can't afford it. They can't really make their bills. Why not just go full Obamacare in a sense, even though that was a law requiring that people have insurance? But the effect of it was the companies and the people who could afford it absorbed the cost for the people that couldn't. And the net negative effect was it basically skyrocketed insurance premiums everywhere and medical costs. But I digress. I mean,
that's what's happening.
Okay.
Isn't it?
So our costs have already skyrocketed. Why are we continuing to legally punish the people who don't have insurance? Why not just say, you know what? If you can't afford it, no problem. Here's a pass, because the rest of us are already absorbing the cost. So why are we criminalizing something in a sense that shouldn't be a crime? They're just trying to get to work and feed their families.
That's not the argument I expected you to have. You have surprised me a little bit. But no, I think...
I'm not saying I believe in it. I'm posing the question for you.
I think that doesn't fix the actual problem.
What do you see as the problem?
So now I'm open to being corrected here, but when you have insurance for other things, your medical insurance, your home insurance, if something happens to you physically or to your house, like nobody has to cause that. Something usually
sure,
does.
Sure, somebody breaks into your house or sets fire to your house, they cause it.
But their insurance doesn't pay for the stuff that happens to your house.
No kidding. Criminals don't have arson insurance. Yeah,
exactly. So, okay, you're with me. Why is it that car insurance is the only thing that we somehow expect the offender to pay for? I choose my policy. I choose my coverage. So I want the coverage that I have picked for my vehicles. If somebody doesn't choose coverage, that's cool.
I don't choose to get cancer from secondhand smoke.
I'm not sure if that is entirely matching my argument. You tried, but I don't think it works. The point I'm making is that car insurance feels backwards to all of our other insurances, because we are relying on the offender to pay rather than just covering our own stuff.
Oh, so you want to be like Florida and Michigan, no fault insurance, right?
I don't think fault matters. So potentially, yes. Because if I have insurance...
Are you aware that Florida and Michigan cost twice as much for insurance as any other state in...
But why?
Aha!
Because not a utopia, but like in my theoretical world, if you don't have insurance, you're SOL. If you get into an accident, you ran the risk of running without insurance, and you got to deal with the consequences. If you have insurance, you're good.
But there's very little consequences if you don't have any assets, right? So if you don't have insurance because you can't afford to, it's also likely that you don't own your car, you don't own a house. There's no assets for somebody to recover as a consequence of, oh, you caused me financial harm, so now I'm going to get justice. There is no justice. They just walk.
Well, yeah, because my insurance would fix my car. I'm good. Their car would remain broken and sad because they don't have insurance and they need to deal with the consequences of not having transportation or whatever else comes with that. Like, I would still be good because I paid for insurance.
Okay, so you agree with me that we should do away with consequences, or you agree with my hypotheses that you could do away with consequences, legal consequences, for people who don't have insurance?
I would say that, that's what I'm proposing, because the consequence is you're boned without a car. Like you
it
have,
doesn't
you
seem
lose.
To stop people, though. Look at all the Nissan Altimas on the road, for instance.
That's true. But like, then would that not end this subsidization that is happening? Because it wouldn't matter if somebody without insurance got into an accident.
Economic theory would tell you that it would make it worse. Because okay. If people saw that there's no consequences for not having insurance, nobody would have insurance unless you had assets that you needed to protect from civil liability.
Interesting.
The other issue is that there are longer term consequences. Now, we can also say, okay, well, these don't affect the type of people who don't have insurance anyway. But if you don't have insurance, you can still get sued by an insurance company. So if I get hit by somebody who's uninsured,
okay,
I will file a claim for under my uninsured motorist policy. and then the insurance company will subrogate the legal process against that person. Now, they will get a default judgment typically because that person's not going to defend themselves in court. They know that there's no money worth chasing, so they'll sell it to a debt collection company. So that person will have a judgment. They'll have collections against them. They'll likely have to get on a payment plan. So now they're in an even worse financial strait. So they definitely can't get insurance.
Okay.
And likely their license will get suspended. So then they can't get their license back. Their registration will be suspended. So they'll get pulled over by the cops again, get more fines, get more money that they have to pay. And these are likely lower class slash poor people that are already struggling to make ends meet. So this cycle of financial consequences for not having enough money just keeps on going.
It's like the overdraft fees at the bank. It just makes an existing problem way worse for what.
So there are consequences. They just don't, like, all they do is keep people in a certain cycle of, well, I don't have enough money for insurance.
Which I don't want. Like, I don't see that, but that's the problem. And why this is a difficult subject is because, you know, if there is a legal obligation to have something like car insurance, there should be consequences to not having it. But if the consequences are just exacerbating the problem that caused the lack of compliance in the first place, like, that's kind of pointless. It's really just beating up on people for the sake of beating up on people.
Correct. And that's where, despite my conservative leanings, will say, I do have an ounce of compassion in me. And that's where I kept thinking, you know, when I first saw an accident like 20 years ago where somebody got rear-ended and the person didn't have license and insurance and whose fault it was, I'm like waiting for the cops to come. Like, yeah, throw them in jail. They got nothing. They just got to leave. I'm like, there's no justice in this world. But now I'm thinking about it more, going, is that justice? But I was talking with both an insurance agent with extensive experience, not just an insurance agent. He owns an insurance agency, very, very wise, and an attorney in Florida who handles a lot of traffic cases, insurance cases, stuff like that. So Florida has the basically a no-fault state, which is not really the correct term. It's PIP insurance, personal injury protection. So that covers medical expenses up to a certain limit and other related costs for you if you get hit. Or if you're in an accident, it doesn't matter whose fault it was. Your insurance covers you.
I got to say, it feels really weird in this moment to kind of like have said I agreed with Florida without saying I was agreeing with Florida, because Florida and I don't get along on a lot of things.
Well, the problem is it doesn't work.
Okay.
Okay. So it's a quote unquote simpler procedure, but both Florida and Michigan have the highest, Florida is the highest, Michigan is the second highest, highest premiums in the country by essentially double what any other state is.
So why doesn't it work? Is it the legal proceedings for the injuries to the people rather than the damage to the car?
The reason it doesn't work in Florida, at least, is the reason that the costs are so high is because they have such a low limit. It's $10,000. So if you file a claim, because you're not going to another insurance company, they're not going to fight it or question it. They just pay it. So the lawyer explained to me that there's an entire like medical industry of chiropractors and stuff that are just milking this $10,000 limit, because they go, oh, well, we're going to get $10,000 out of it. And the insurance companies don't fight it because it's not worth it. And he said, contrary to like what you would think is normal logic, if you raise that limit to like $1 million, then the insurance companies will fight and actually process each claim. Because if there's a $5,000 medical bill, the practitioner is not going to try to milk it. They're just going to say, well, you need $5,000 worth of care. Because if they milk it too much, the insurance company is going to go back and go, well, no, that's not what you need. So in practice, contrary to what you would think, is if you raise the limits, you lower the amount of fraud. So fraud is really what is driving the costs in Florida for this.
So it doesn't work because people suck. And we can't just like, everybody's got to have an edge or got to milk or got to get a payday or some BS.
So using that theory, if people are going to milk a system, if we go back to my original hypotheses and like eliminate consequences for people with no insurance or no license, people will start milking that too.
Yeah.
Might not be worth it. Because anyone with like a reasonable financial standing, whether it's net worth or good credit, you don't want to ruin either of those things.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling the problem would get worse. So what is the solution?
Well, somebody's already tried my solution. Apparently it doesn't work because people are suck and are trash and can't just take what they need. Everybody's got to try to get a payday and try to get ahead unfairly.
Mm.
Without pulling themselves up by their bootstraps, Doug.
So the lawyer proposed a solution, and
this is what happens when you get somebody uneducated in a subject to like come up with a solution.
I'm
at least acknowledging I have stuff to learn.
I just like the thought process of this, because when I thought about it, I'm like, why are we essentially criminalizing something that is putting people in a cycle that's repeating the cycle?
Well, and I think something I thought of too, and we've brought this up on the podcast before, at least I have, that like we are so card dependent in our society that the option doesn't exist for vast swaths of this country to just not have a car.
Correct. We are
There's no public transportation.
Europe, we are not England. Yeah. It's not practical for us to have ubiquitous public transportation.
Because that's another
areas maybe, but.
And that's another easy option is like, well, if you can't, for whatever reason, if you don't want to pay for it, if you can't afford it, don't have a car. But that can't happen in the United States. So we've created this system that causes this complex problem that is exacerbated by people sucking. So now we have this complicated, weird insurance thing where you got to fight and whoever's at fault and you know, whatever.
So I'm going to make one point that's my own, one point that was the attorney's. I would argue that the problem is solved at a different level. The reason car insurance is unaffordable is because of ambulance chasing attorneys, juries, and people who are greedy when they get hit.
Yeah.
So they are chasing people who have big insurance policies and or big net worths. And any time a judgment happens or a settlement happens, because let's be honest, the insurance companies will more often settle a case that they could win and should win, but will settle it because of the possibility of losing. They're purely looking at it from a financial odds point of view, and they're going, it is worth it for us to settle. It's like the briefcase game, right? The deal or no deal.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's how they're calculating it. So that is what's driving up the cost. And I read years and years ago that the civil lawsuits against people for basically the lack of tort reform, not just in car insurance, but across the board, medical malpractice, et cetera, cost the average person, I think it was $7,400 a year just in increased costs.
Oof.
Whether it's packaging disclaimers, more lawyers on staff, bigger insurance premiums. That was like 15 years ago.
Oof.
So you got to figure it's over $10,000 a year that we are paying just to deal with all these lawsuits, right? Because nobody really benefits from these. One person might get really rich in the short term, but they're costing everybody else long term.
Yeah.
And that costs not just rich people. Like you said, the insurance companies are going to pass the cost along. So that's why car insurance is so expensive, even for, you know, Nissan Altimas. So the way to fix it on a true, like, root cause holistic
scale. Is this still your opinion? Is this your idea or these?
This is my idea.
Okay. Just
is to have reform in the courts with civil liability and have reasonable settlements, right? Like if two people are negligent in a car crash, One of them has, you know, general minimum coverage for minimum budgets or whatever that tagline was. And the other one has, you know, $2 million of umbrella. The settlements are going to be wildly different, not because of the accident or the injuries, but because of the possible rewards. That shouldn't be.
Yeah.
There should be like a standardized settlement system or something like that, that, that caps these, that limits what can be paid out.
Well, and that would solve, would
get the cost down for people.
And it would solve my people sucking thing, because there would be, you couldn't have these like money hungry lawyers or people chasing after thing after certain cases to try to make the award at the end or the result so huge to then make everybody's premiums go up.
Right. Or, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things you could reform in the legal system to prevent these ridiculous lawsuits. The other theory, and I somewhat agree with this theory, I think.
Now, this is the lawyer's theory.
Correct. Is you make the crime a real crime. So in Florida, currently, if you are caught going 100 miles an hour or more, they can put you in jail.
Mm.
It is an actual crime, a felony, not a misdemeanor.
Okay.
But if you're driving down the highway at 95 miles an hour with no license and no insurance, it's a misdemeanor. They'll give you a ticket and let you keep driving with no license and no insurance.
Oh, seriously?
Yes.
That's wild.
Because speeding kills people, but, you know, unlicensed, uninsured drivers don't.
That are almost speeding, still speeding.
Whatever. Less in a Nissan Altima with no tires. And the other thing that he said is the uninsured drivers cause more accidents, because if they're not, if they don't have insurance, it's because they don't have money. So they're also buying used tires. They have crappy cars, not maintaining them. So he said, when it rains, you all see all the crappy cars causing wrecks because they have no grip, no brakes, not because they're worse drivers per se, just because they have improper equipment. So it's like a compounding problem. He said, make the penalties stricter. Like, actually throw people in jail for not having insurance. And he said, not so that you can fill the jails up with a stupid thing, right? The counterpoint to that is, well, she's just a working single mom trying to feed her kids and go to work.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you care about your kids and don't want to go to jail, figure out a way to get to work. Public transportation. Or just figure out how to pay for car insurance. And then that goes back to my other solution is reduce the cost of car insurance through limiting civil liability.
And because of this stuff, we've created a machine that just keeps getting bigger and bigger to feed itself. And it's all outside of reality now. It's absurd.
And he also said, like, make it an actual consequence rather than a financial penalty. Because if they don't have any money to begin with, getting a judgment against them or sending them to collections or whatever makes the problem worse. It doesn't help them solve the problem of getting car insurance. If you put them in jail for a week, but, you know, give them a public defender, like, don't take money out of their pocket other than this is a very real consequence. All of a sudden you go, oh no, I need to go to work. I don't want to go to jail. I can't afford to be away from my kids for a week or whatever, my family. So let's not let that happen. So I don't know if that would work in practice, but that's one theory to fix it, is instead of doing away with consequences, you make them worse. Well, and non-financial.
And the financial consequence is weird because it is either meaningless if you have enough money to just pay it and not affect your daily life, or
like
it
speeding
is
tickets,
literally crippling, worse so than, making a lot of assumptions here, but potentially worse than a week in jail or something, because you just get caught in the cycle. Long term, it's worse and doesn't actually.
Well, and then getting insurance again is more expensive because you have to get, if you have a suspended license, you have to get an SR-22 special policy, and then a policy on top. You have to pay the premium for the SR-22 and insurance. So like your comeback insurance is crazy expensive. So why would you even bother?
Ugh.
Forget about decriminalizing marijuana. Let's criminalize. Not having
Be mad at him.
All right. We've shrewd negotiated ourselves into a corner. So with that, we're going to go to shrewd negotiator.
Pull the parachute.
This might be more like a wall of shame. This is a negative review left for a Nissan dealer. Ethan, you drive a Nissan Murano, right?
I drive a Nissan Murano.
How's your CVT?
Just swapped the fluid.
Is it continuously variabling?
I got to do
constantly viscous.
Yeah.
Constant. So the review, 1 star. We purchased a new 2020 Nissan Murano Platinum from this dealer. We had all the required maintenance performed at the dealer, but unfortunately, the CVT died at less than 120,000 miles.
Don't they all?
We're now stuck with an unusable car before we've even finished making the payments.
How much do they drive?
That's 5 years.
Financing a new car and having it be a Murano is a bad move.
So you're telling me that they drove 120,000 miles?
We are in discussion with a Lemon Law lawyer, and we'll probably never buy another Nissan from this dealership. Or from any other dealer. Okay, but why do you leave a 1-star review for the dealer? You bought a new car, bought an extended warranty, and then your CVT fails, which they're known to fail.
Yeah, you don't
and
have
you
to
get
look
annoyed
hard.
At the dealer.
Yeah, why is that? It's like they're implying Five that the dealer later. Is the problem because of their servicing or something. That's wild. Look, I understand you want to scream into the void, but you picked the wrong void.
That's like, it's with Nissan owners and dealerships. Remember, this is like 2 years ago, the story about the woman who bought a Rogue and her tires went bald after like 30,000 miles.
Yes.
She got mad at the dealer.
How could you sell me a
crazy Nissan buyer mentality, man? I don't know.
Are you one of those people, Ethan?
I hope not. No, I don't think I am.
How many miles you got on your CVT?
I'm done with Nissan after. I have 160,000 miles on my 2016
Dang,
Nissan.
Got one of the good ones.
Original CVT?
Original CVT. I service it. I take care
Matching
of it.
Matching numbers.
Matching. I'm telling you, he said he was about to say he's done with Nissan, but we all know he's going to buy a Crosscab.
Hey, come on now. I am done with Nissan, though, I think, after this. So.
All right. You heard it here first.
I think Nissan might be done after this.
Nissan might be done with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just like period. It's like they might not have an option.
Yeah.
Like Mitsubishi.
That's possible.
The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jake Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield all-sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one on July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine, so get yours at sheffieldwatches.com and be sure to mention you found them on Switchcast.
Tyler?
Yes, Doug.
There is an EV that I can get behind.
Is it because it's too fast and you can't keep up?
Yes, all of my internal combustion cars are slow, relatively, but I don't care. I recently walked into, didn't walk into, I backed my Diablo up to the local Thai restaurant, and one of the guys who works there has a fast model Tesla.
Yeah.
And I walked in and he goes, "How's it feel to have the second fastest car in the parking lot?"
Really? Oh.
Yes.
Those folks at that local Thai restaurant are amazing.
Yep.
Love that.
But he also, my plate says kit car and his plate is the Roman numeral. It's like XLIX, which is the Roman numeral version of 69. So I just fired back, "How's it feel to have the second coolest vanity plate?"
Nice.
Anyway, I have not been the biggest fan of EVs if you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, for a number of reasons, but it has nothing to do with the EVs themselves or the technology. It has to do with the government subsidies. It has to do with the narrative that this is the future, like it or not. It has to do with the narrative that these are zero emissions, which, yes, it's zero tailpipe emissions, but they do have global production emissions, that they are saving the environment, they're the way of the future, whatever. I don't buy any of those things, and I believe that that is proving out. We're seeing it now as so many companies are backing away from their promises to go full EV by a certain year. However, one thing I did say is that I felt that for EVs to become a reasonable value proposition for the average person is they had to make the electric version of the people's car.
Yes.
They had to make a car that was reliable, affordable, and practical, not just this luxury statement.
And I think, you know, you and I have talked a bunch that all of the EVs that have come out so far have been geared towards the high margin luxury car buyers. There has been nothing, as far as I'm concerned, that has truly been a people's car.
There have been attempts at it.
Yes.
They just suck. Big time. Like the Coda EV. So
even the more normal cars, like I would consider the Mach-E a more normal car, the Model 3, like those can still get pretty expensive. And it's not really, it's like the middle range. Like it's not truly a like people's car.
And the costs are not accurately represented because charging is either built into the price of the car or you're getting incredible government subsidies either at the point of sale in terms of tax credits or in terms of the companies getting money from the government. Like what Rivian got a bunch of money to build this giant plant in Georgia that they don't even need because they're not even getting anywhere near the production capacity, their existing plant. Like there's just all this money being poured into EVs. But Car and Driver article from last week, will the tiny slate truck become the next big thing?
That's a cute title.
This radical new pickup is set to become one of the most affordable vehicles in the U.S. market. And they make the point that not only EVs, but also just vehicles, period, are impossible to get on a budget. There's no basic, inexpensive cars out there.
And I think we found a few segments ago that the Mitsubishi, whatever their entry-level car is, that was the cheap car you could get for like under 20.
Diamante.
Or whatever. Like they don't make that anymore.
Yep. Let's see. Upstart automaker Slate.
Mirage, yes.
Aims to fill those pricing voids with its truck. It's a battery-powered pickup boasting a starting price that's estimated to be around $25,000. Now, you don't get much for $25,000. You are basically buying a running vehicle. You don't have a radio. You don't have, I think, air conditioning. You don't have pretty much anything in terms of features, but they are building them to be modular so you can add whatever you like pretty much at any point in time. You can customize them in terms of the actual build to order, or you could just buy upgrades. They want to be like an open source type build so that other people can also design and build accessories for them. And they're doing away with things like audio systems because nobody needs them anymore. Nobody needs navigation. Nobody needs screens. They're just going to have a dock for your phone. And like, why not have Bluetooth speakers? You don't need wiring. Well, nobody needs a radio in their car anymore.
I like the new approach in thinking. You know, I like to have a stereo system in my car, whatever. Like, I like those things because I like what cars used to be. But I like this new approach to, like, maybe people don't need that and it's just adding to cost. So this is a perfect option for folks that just... The amount of people I see driving around with, like, a Bluetooth speaker just shoved on their dash.
Mm-hmm.
This would... Fine. I'm trying to think. There was a modular car that I think was Toyota. Maybe it was Nissan, but it, like, could be, like, a shooting brake or it could be a sedan. This is kind of like... I like the modular approach.
To hit its price target, Slate limits body style choices and offers just one color scheme for the exterior and interior. All trucks will leave the factory in two-seat single-cab configuration with a 5-foot bed, donning unpainted and largely dent-resistant gray polypropylene composite body panels.
Ooh, is this similar? Like Saturn?
Yes!
Oh,
yes!
Heck yeah.
They anticipate saving hundreds of millions of dollars by circumventing the need for a paint shop or metal stamping presses. Buyers can add more color with full exterior wraps at the brand's accessories division. So it's like the Cybertruck in a sense in that regard, but it's simple and reliable.
Potentially well executed.
Really, it's like the friggin' Ford Model T. You can have it in any color you want as long as it's black.
And I think we have forgotten the simplicity that is required in the people's car. Because we've gotten... cars are so ubiquitous, they've become so expensive, and like, you know, we look back at those things fondly, but that's also part of what made them work.
Yes. Yeah. So I love this idea. I don't think I would buy one, just because I don't have a need for it, but I think this is pretty fantastic.
I dig how it looks, too. The simplicity. Like, and I like the steel wheels. Steel wheels need to make a comeback.
Indeed. Indeed. Now, the question is, I guess, twofold. One, can they turn a profit without 18 rounds of funding from venture capitalist firms and going public and government subsidies and intervention and all this stuff? Can they just make a car that makes money?
Well, it seems like a part of the way they're going to try to do that is go direct to consumers, similar to what Tesla does.
They're going to run into some issues in some states with that, though. We'll cover that on a future podcast, but Rivian and Tesla have been in legal battles with a number of different states fighting their laws that require they protect franchises and require or prohibit manufacturers from selling directly to the consumer, claiming that that's some sort of monopoly, right? You need dealers for competition. No, you don't.
Yeesh.
There's plenty of competition between the individual manufacturers. You don't need another middleman. So that may be a little bit of a roadblock there, although I guess you could always say, well, if you're in Ohio and you can't buy one, just buy one from Michigan or something.
Yeah.
So
go to your neighbor.
You've got that. But then the other question is, can they make this actually work? Can it have enough range such that it's practical? Will the charging times be, you know, charging has gotten fairly simple and quick for most vehicles, but
and I think, you know, the charging debate has been had off and on. I'm not an EV enthusiast either, but I think everybody's been trying to make the range massive because the first thing that people talked about was range anxiety and can I make it to my destination? Well, you don't need 700 miles of range if the charging infrastructure exists. So there's a bit of a chicken and an egg thing, but I like that they're not trying to put a massive battery in this, which adds extra cost, extra weight, makes it less efficient. You know, if you, now that we are getting to a point where the infrastructure is improving, maybe you could just charge this every night or every other night. Like, I think about my daily driver, I can get like 250-ish miles on a tank of gas. Now, it takes me 5 minutes to fill up, so that's not a problem. We just got to get to that point, and then we don't need all these massive, inefficient, heavy batteries.
Yep. They're also not trying to pretend to be something that they're not. Like Tesla, the truck is rear-wheel drive. There's no all-wheel drive, so it's not trying to be an off-road vehicle. Although you can buy a 2-inch lift kit and all-terrain tires for... I love this. At least they admit that people are posers. For truck owners looking for that off-tarmac tough look.
Yeah. What I like that this is also an EV that isn't touting like performance figures. It's correct. Not about how fast it can get to 0
I'm
to 60.
So
it doesn't
tired
matter.
Of that. EVs are faster. Then what?
Yeah, and who cares? They're not...
It's replacing a Toyota Camry, not my Porsche.
Yeah.
Although I guess Porsches are all EVs now, too, or a lot of them. So I feel like EVs don't know what they want to be, and this truck does. This truck is solving for X.
Yes.
Hopefully it works. Honestly, this is one of the first EVs I'm rooting for to show you that I can have a balanced opinion. I'm not like 100% biased against something just because I want to be against it.
Well, and I think what's also interesting, not to distract from this late conversation, is that Ford's new approach to EVs is a modular approach that I think could be pretty similar to this. And so this could be a sign that, like, this is the way to make these work.
In order for EVs to work, the business of EVs has to work.
Yes.
It works for Tesla. It has really not worked for anybody else yet. So we'll see. I like this idea. I like it a lot. So I'm excited to see. It's a heck of a lot better looking than the Cybertruck.
Oh, it looks great. I dig it.
The Cybertruck looks like something that a kindergartner designed. This looks like something that was built at the Lego headquarters. But
I dig it.
I'm not hating on that. That's not a diss on it. Anyway, it's time now for the props and flops brought to you by Switch Cars.
And Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy and sell cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory online at switchcars.com and be sure to mention Switchcast for special pricing when available. You can find more information as well online at switchcars.com or you could come visit our showroom in Twinsburg, Ohio. Doug, what is the pick of the week?
It is a Honda McCivic.
What is a Mc?
Well,
is that
it's
like a
their,
special. What,
huh? Yes, it's well, it's the yes. Pirate Edition. The Type R.
Oh, okay.
It's a limited edition Civic Type R, which is yellow and red.
That's
everywhere.
Wild.
It is wild.
I did see it on your story, and my fiance was very on board with the yellow GT3, less on board with the yellow Civic Type R, I got to be honest.
I think it was the red interior,
yeah,
maybe.
I think it was.
I happen to kind of like it. It's the right yellow with the right red, and it's not too much red. It's just accents on the seats and wheels and stuff like that. But anyway, limited edition, only made them in one color. Rarer than most limited edition Porsches, if we're being honest.
Options!
And only has 2,000 miles.
Ooh.
So check that one out. Our flop of the week. Oh, Kyler, have you heard of the Centro Seat 911?
Is this thing back? It was for sale for like ages on Facebook.
Yeah, there's a company that made a few of these.
How much for this?
Okay, so let's tell people what the Centro Seat 911 is. It is... I guess a bunch of ex Porsche employees / engineers that decided they wanted to make a tribute to the McLaren F1. So they took a 911 and moved the seat to the middle.
And it's a 911 cab.
They did a coupe
with
also.
A PDK.
Apparently they've done three cars. Oh yes. And the PDK shifter is like back here
by
your butt. So
this doesn't work. Why? You know, they spent so much time thinking of if they could. They didn't realize that they should have thought if they should. Nor people need to watch Jurassic Park. This is just a dinosaur. What?
So I've been wanting to make fun of this car since I saw it at, I think, Mecum like 10 years ago. And then again, since I saw it on this Instagram video when somebody went up to the owner and he just kept saying like, oh man, it's like driving a McLaren F1. It's inspired by the McLaren F1. It was built by Porsche engineers. It's like a McLaren F1. I was like, but is it like the seat's just in the middle? Like how about a Citroën Karen?
Citroën
had the seat in the middle.
Well,
too.
And it's got like a weird like roll bar situation. This is just, oh gosh, why? And those seats cannot be comfortable. Back seats in a 911 are awful. You want your only passenger
you can't
option
at
yeah.
all.
You're just like going to be a board.
But they put 4,000 hours into this.
I can put a lot of hours into a lot of things that don't really result in anything worthwhile, right. Doug.
Well, speaking of cars that should never have been made, if you're not on our Patreon, we have a special bonus episode of what cars should never have been made. Switchcast.live/Patreon or patreon.com/switchcast. Anyway, this car, this convertible auctioned this past week on P-Car Market. And boy, oh boy, it is a one of one for sure in the convertible. It got bid up to $45,000 for a 997.2 Carrera S Cabriolet.
And Doug, how much do they want for it?
Far less than just a regular Carrera S cab would go for. The buy it now is $95,000.
Holy crap.
The people have spoken. Nobody wants a center seat 911.
The little sport chrono wart looks so silly, just like off to the side.
Oh gosh, this thing is
what a dumb vehicle.
This is an abomination. It really
I'm not even
is.
Sitting here like they ruined a Porsche. How could they? I don't care. It's a cab. Who cares? But like why waste the time and the money to build this? At least it's got full leather. I like that.
Our prop of the week plays on a previous prop of the week, which was the Defy Vision race, where blind people were guided around a racetrack by navigators. Yes. And it was absolute mayhem. Well, there's lots of jokes we could have made about, you know, women drivers, but we didn't want to be insensitive. But the internet already made that joke for us because... didn't know this, but in the 80s and 90s, the Macau Grand Prix added a celebrity race featuring Hong Kong and Asian pop idols, actors, and TV personalities, all female. They were put in identical cars and sent around the circuit with pro race drivers as their passenger instructors. Yes. This was on MotoForm's Instagram page. The commentary is unreal.
It's so good.
It is incredibly well.
And the escalation, it starts out really peaceful, like, oh, we're going down the straightaway, things are looking good.
Well, the pace car is running behind them and keeping up with them. Yes. So they're going very, very slow. But literally the first two cars make it around essentially the first corner, and then the third one just drives straight into the barrier.
It does.
And
just not
the
even
rest
turning.
Of them follow. Just it's just a giant pileup behind the first two cars into essentially like the first hard right-hand corner.
Oh, this is so entertaining. And I do love the 964 turbo like pace car just creeping up behind them as there's a pileup of like 12 cars. Oh, so entertaining. People who don't know how to drive race cars in race cars is awesome.
The first comment on this is entertaining, but wow, the most sexist commentator I've ever heard. And hey, this was the 90s, man. This was.
Yes.
But when you have I don't know if it was just about women drivers. It was like the star in a reasonably priced car thing in Top Gear. You put a bunch of pop stars that maybe have never driven or cared to drive in a car.
And just see what happens.
Around a racetrack.
I do love another comment I'm seeing here. Is more excitement here than in the last 10 years of F1. Bring back whimsy.
Oh, yeah, because they're saying it now, not like in the time period. Yes. I was like, no, that was the exciting time period of F1. Yeah, that's pretty funny. That's just gold. Just gold. Also, speaking of female drivers, Ethan, our producer, got married.
Woo!
So congratulations, Ethan. That's a major prop of the week.
Thank you.
Yeah. Ethan is a male, but he now has a female driver in his family that he can right seat, you know, critique.
Boy, we might need like to workshop race. That segue, but you know, I see what. Congrats, Ethan.
I gotta give my kudos to Jesse though. There's very few people that I feel safe driving like passenger seat in the car with, just in general. But she is one of them. So.
Nice. Who are the others?
I don't think I can marry a woman that I didn't respect her driving abilities.
100%. It'd be a challenge. It'd be a challenge.
Yeah.
Aaron's a good driver.
Yes.
Good.
Yes. But she does not, she has a rule. Like she does not want to drive her car if we are both going somewhere. Like I'll be like, oh, this is your car. She's like, no, you drive. And she even sent me a meme at one point. I don't remember what it was. But it was essentially like making fun of men who were riding passenger with their wives, you know, because that's it's traditional roles, but it kind of a joke about it, like men should be driving the car. And it was like the only reason a man would be riding passenger with his wife driving if he's like, you know, sick or, you know, handicapped or gay or something like that. It's basically like... If you're a husband, you drive your wife.
Oh goodness!
In the car,
Ethan, the car shut it down. Shut it down. It's like, oh god.
I will say, I got to give I got to give a few shout outs here. One thing I want to mention, Jesse, her first car was a stick shift Honda Accord from like 2002.
She might be more of a car enthusiast than our Ethan here.
Arguably, but she ended up having to get rid of that because of some knee surgeries, got a 2003 Honda Accord that she took to 310,000 miles and just got rid of.
She is more of a car enthusiast than Ethan.
But
wow.
He is.
We just need to get her in here.
Has a CVT.
I know.
Just last year was when she got rid of her 310,000 mile 2003 Honda Accord. So that's cool. Any car guy should love that and appreciate that.
Anybody who can take a car to 300,000 miles, like,
mad respect.
Car guy card, quote unquote.
It's amazing. And Bailey, our good friend of the show here, offered to buy it from her.
Seriously?
He did. But also another shout out. Doug hooked me up with a getaway car for our exit, for our send off to the wedding.
Did Jesse drive it away?
Jesse did not drive
Maybe
it
she
away.
Should have. We need to run it back, Jesse do this whole thing away, over again.
She could have. If I had given you a stick, she would have had to drive.
Oh, goodness. You're acting like I've never driven a stick shift
you
before.
Said you didn't want a stick because you were going to be nervous.
Because
you were rusty.
I will be honest. I'm rusty. But I do think that she could have hopped in it and she would have killed it. But anyway, Doug, thank you from the bottom of my heart for hooking me up with the 911 to
like how
to
you're
off.
Trying to thank this guy and you're just dogging on him.
I know, I'm trying to make this be like a kind thing, and he's like, friggin' idiot. Can't drive a car. Thanks,
it's all
Doug.
Fun here. All fun.
Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.